Plant City may be best known for its annual Strawberry Festival, but there's so much more to the Hillsborough community. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the National Foundation for Transplants. Right now, hundreds of Tampa residents need an organ transplant they can't afford. You can join National Foundation for Transplants Operation Second Chance at transplants.org to learn how to help give someone a second chance at life.
From the studios of WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. Plant City is located just off I-4 between Tampa and Lakeland. The community's history is steeped in agriculture, which has led many to believe it gets its name from the plants that it produces. But Plant City was actually named after railroad developer Henry B. Plant. You can still hear trains regularly pass through the historic downtown. But a lot has changed in Plant City in recent decades. Its proximity to Tampa and Orlando has brought in more people and more businesses. Residents say the small town feel lives on, but some are concerned that increased development could change that. Today, we'll hear stories from a diverse group of people who call Plant City home. This is the first in a special Florida Matters two-part series that continues 2 weeks from now. The shows are part of WUSF's occasional series, Telling Tampa Bay Stories. We team up with University of South Florida journalism students to highlight different communities in our area. Most of the stories heard today came from interviews we recently recorded at the Plant City Photo Archive and History Center. Plant City has long been a farming town, and Judy Whitson works to try and keep it that way. The executive director of the Hillsborough County Farm Bureau paints a picture of the changing landscape of agriculture in Plant City.
I'm Judy Whitson. I'm with Hillsborough County Farm Bureau. I'm executive director there. I've been in that office for 27 years now. I work in Plant City with the agriculture industry, so I'm working with farmers. And you cannot get any more salt of the earth than farmers. And that's basically what the whole community is made up of. The farmers are the same. They're farming the same ground they've been farming that their fathers and their grandfathers farmed before them. So that part of Plant City hasn't changed a whole lot. The landscape of agriculture in Plant City area has changed tremendously over the last 20 years due to greening. The psyllid that got in our citrus trees and has killed off hundreds of thousands of acres of citrus. And the most disheartening thing for me has been when I drive around Plant City and the Dover and all of this area years ago was to see where a new grove had been pushed. And when you see roots on all the trees up, it was just heartbreaking because you knew that was another field that was gone. That was another grove that wasn't going to be producing oranges for us. Florida has lost probably 70% of their orange crop in the last 5 years. Plant City has lost all of theirs. So all of that has turned into strawberries and other crops. We're growing peaches here now that we haven't been able to grow before. We got a little overrun several years ago when all the oranges were going out with strawberries, and we went from 7,000 to 11,000 acres in just a couple of years. Well, we had a great market for 7,000 acres. We didn't have such a good market for 11,000 acres. So we're always looking for alternative crops in Plant City. We're introducing olive trees. We're introducing more avocados, more blueberries. We've got a lot more blueberries now than what we had 20 years ago. The average age of a farmer now is 56 years old, and they don't have children that want to go into that same industry. So a lot of the farmers, when they lost their citrus, they either lease out their land now or they sold it off completely. You know, every time you see a housing development go up, that was farmland. So, you know, again, that's a disheartening thing for me. Every time I see a new subdivision go up, it's like, oh, you know, we lost another one. So our agriculture land is reducing because of genetics and lost crops. The biggest problem still that has been for years and years is labor force. Because who wants to go out and pick strawberries and who wants to pick oranges? And, you know, people don't want to do that as a career. So we have to bring in outside people to take care of those crops for us. There is a big migrant farmer worker population in Hillsborough County, especially in Plant City area. It takes migrant labor to pick all 7,000 to 11,000 acres of strawberries. They plant all those strawberries, they care for all those strawberries, and they pick all those strawberries. And all of that is done by hand. So we do have immigrants that come in. We have labor forces that we bring in from other countries that they come in on a work visa and they come in just to work. There's so much government regulation that it's getting harder and harder to get those workers here. But the immigrants work well within the community. A lot of them have become part of the community. They've lived here for years and years. They've raised their families here. So it's been a win-win for us in Plant City having that worker population here. It's amazing that a lot of people in Plant City are transplants. A lot of people move to Plant City because it's a quiet, small town, and a lot of them don't get it. The powers that be, they don't remember sometimes that without agriculture in this town, they wouldn't have a town.
As Judy mentioned, migrant labor has been critical to agriculture's survival in Plant City. The parents of Serenio Cervantes Flores brought him to the United States from Mexico when he was 7 years old. They've worked as field workers on farms across the country while raising six kids. Cervantes Flores, a recent USF graduate, talks about how his parents' experience shaped him. His interview was recorded at his family home in Plant City.
My name is Serenio Cervantes Flores. I am 25 years old. Every summer we used to go up north, Ohio, and then we came back south during October. Plant City, I think, we came in 2002. My parents, the reason they chose here was because there's a lot of jobs that they can do. Anywhere else, they probably can't get them because they require citizenship and stuff. So in here, you know, there's a lot of labor work. There's a lot of strawberries that need to be picked, a lot of tomatoes that need to be picked that other people wouldn't do, so they fill that gap. And it's hard work, but they do it because, you know, they can. And, you know, Plant City is known for having a lot of strawberry fields. That's one of the reasons I think they chose to be here. It's difficult because I've also worked with them. You know, sometimes it's very physically demanding work. You're out there in the sun. Sometimes you work, you know, when it's cold, when it's hot, when it's raining or sprinkling, and you kind of have to be out there. Otherwise, you could lose your job, and, you know, you don't want to do that, especially when you have a family to support. I've been working for a long time, and it's really tough, you know, going to school and then having to work on Saturdays. And it's bad, but then again, you kind of see how my parents have to go through all of this. That's one of the motivations that I use to, you know, keep studying, going to school, hopefully, you know, get a good paying job in the future and help them the way they've helped me. I have a degree in cell and molecular biology, but the reason I took it was so that I can prepare for medical school, which is one of the main goals that I have right now. I want to go to family medicine. I think a lot of migrant community around here, they don't have access to healthcare. You know, if they get sick, you kind of just have to take pills, any take-home remedies, and hope that you don't get extremely sick. Otherwise, you have to go to the doctor. You have to find ways to, you know, pay for those bills. You know, that's one of the things that I want to go into, family medicine, try to promote preventive medicine, especially for my community, because I've seen how a lot of them have suffered. My family values education a lot, so I'm glad that them as a migrant people, they have contributed not only financially, but they're very supportive in my decision to continue studying. Because I know a lot of people in my situation, you know, somebody who's undocumented, somebody who lives in the migrant community, you know, someone's like me shouldn't have a bachelor's degree, you know, but I did. And it's a lot of things because of the lessons that they've taught me, hard work, dedication, education first. And I'm grateful that they have been supportive, you know, every step of the way.
Many Many of the farm owners working in Plant City today come from families who've lived there for generations. Alvin Futch's grandfather built a ranch in Plant City in the early 1900s. At 87, Futch is still keeping the family business alive.
My name is Alvin Futch. The day I was born at home, 1931, a quarter of a mile from where I live today. My grandfather Cones, he was a good-sized farmer. He grew a lot of Irish potatoes and had cattle and so forth. And my brother milked the cows, and my job was to feed the horses, and my younger brother was to feed the hogs and pump water for all the livestock every afternoon and every morning before we went to school. The ranch where we are now, my dad and mother put together 1,000 acres of it, and my grandfather Cone owned the other 1,000. And we farmed 100 acres of it, and growing feed crops for the cattle and growing corn for the horses and whatever. I still have 65 acres of strawberries and 100 head of cattle. So that's what I'm still doing at 87 years old. I own 300 acres, and I bought it for my mother and dad, me and my 3 kids. They own parts of it. They helped me pay for it. And they grew up here, and so they're part of it. They're now doing an agritourism event at our ranch, Fox Squirrel Corn Maze. This is the 7th year they've been doing it, and it has been very kind to them. And it's where people from the cities can come out to the country and see all kind of things that goes on in the country. And they have hay rides and all kind of stuff for kids. I get offers all the time to want to buy part of the land and develop it and all this kind of stuff, and we don't do that. We don't need it. We're happy. Home is home. It always is.
Alvin Futch turned down offers to buy his land, but Ed Verner did not. The businessman talks about why his family chose to sell their farmland for development and how he's been involved with revamping Plant City's downtown ever since.
My name is Ed Verner. I was coming to Plant City as a grandson of my grandmother my whole life, but my actually residing here began in about 1984. I was very much in love with the citrus industry, so I gravitated towards that immediately when I was offered a chance. My grandfather had been involved with citrus and almost all farming shipped by rail out of this city as far back as the 1920s. By the time I came along, I became a truck driver. I was actually hauling the fruit to the nearby plants. We were in citrus probably until the late 90s when we began to get out. There was a severe freeze in 1989, Christmas Day, actually. Not a Christmas present from God. We had a really, really bad freeze that night, and it didn't kill, but it was still devastating to the industry, and even more so was NAFTA when they passed the North American Free Trade Agreement. It decimated citrus profits in this area by about 24 cents a pound solid. Back then, that represented about a 30% cut in what local growers were getting for their orange juice product. When we got out, there was kind of a pressure for development. You could make a lot of money developing groves into rooftops. It was sad to me. I liked citrus. It was a product that employed a huge number of people. It was a giant industry in the Plant City area. But once you develop for rooftops, you can make a lot of money once, and then you're done. My grandfather came to Plant City as a 19-year-old boy with nothing but a little bit of capital and a lot of zest. And through the years, he became more and more involved with several aspects in Plant City. Most of the businesses that I've been involved with either sprang from his previous efforts or they were at least inspired by things he had done. So far, I guess since 1919, we're coming on our 100th anniversary now of having all of the business interests we managed from Plant City in downtown, by the way. I like Plant City's downtown. People frequently say, oh, I wish Plant City's downtown could be revitalized. But I remember in 1995 when I became involved in it more directly, it was dead then. We had 30% occupancy and we were offering 80% discounts and we couldn't find tenants. Now we have almost 100% occupancy and we're only offering about 15% discounts. I would argue now Plant City's downtown is fully revitalized. It's just now, what else does it add? We manage several 100,000 square feet in Plant City's downtown, and I still admire the people who wish it could do more, and they get frustrated that we don't have a beer garden, or we don't have a tattoo parlor, or we don't have a nightlife. That's a fair criticism. It's still business professional and or antique and entertainment shopping oriented. And it's not a whole lot of young college kids, you know, just being young. We're still shy on the residential component in our downtown. I grew up in Lakeland, and I've watched their revitalization. And when I made a study of downtowns in Plant City compared to Mount Dora, St. Augustine, Savannah, Charleston, the thing we were lacking was the third, fourth, and fifth floors of the downtown buildings. But Plant City was only built three stories high. And there's some conjecture about how that came to be. Some people say it was because you couldn't have a building taller than the Baptist Church steeple. And it's a chicken and the egg thing. You know, if you want to have high-quality residential in a downtown, you have to have something to do after 5 p.m. But if you want to have a beer pub, or if you want to have a bakery, or if you want to have a donut shop, or even a place where you can buy a AA battery for your remote control, then you have to have the residences. I don't really care whether somebody brings the egg or the chicken to town, but somebody's going to have to bring one or the other, and then we'll have it. I hope that a newcomer to Plant City would learn to appreciate more than just a strawberry. You know, a lot of people associate Plant City with only strawberries, but our heritage runs deep in a lot of directions. There have been some great personalities in Plant City's past that were wildly passionate about the strawberry industry. We've had other people that never touched it, and yet they made a massive impact. And frequently, I find newcomers bring new ideas, and if it ain't here yet, they'll build it.
I'm Robin Sussingham. This is Florida Matters, and you're listening to part one of Telling Tampa Bay Stories, Plant City. When we come back from the break, we'll hear about life in Plant City's African American community. We're taking a short break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sussingham, and we're learning about the history and evolution of Plant City. Today's show is the first in a special two-part series called Telling Tampa Bay Stories. Part two will air 2 weeks from now and focuses on some of the places that make this Hillsborough City special. Plant City has evolved into an ethnically and racially diverse town where a little more than half of its residents are white, about a third are Hispanic, about 14% are Black, and other races make up the small remainder. Some African Americans interviewed for this series say that growing up, the layout of the rail town gave meaning to the term the wrong side of the tracks. They say Black residents were often pushed to the city's less desirable neighborhoods and struggled to fit in with whites. Still, many members of Plant City's Black community made important contributions to the town's history and continue to do so today. William Thomas Jr. shares an example in his story about the Bing Rooming House. The National Historic Site served as a hotel for African Americans during segregation.
My name is William Thomas Jr. Originally, I was born in Plant City. My father, William Thomas Sr., served in the military, so I spent a lot of my time traveling the world and then came back home after going to college and getting settled in. Coming back home, I was voluntold to serve as president of the Improvement League of Plant City about 4 years ago, and that is a nonprofit that my father actually served as president on when he came back home. And one of the Improvement League of Plant City's signature projects is the Bing Rooming House, African American Museum. That is a two-story structure here within the city limits. It served as a hotel for Blacks during the era of segregation. It was owned by Ms. Janie L. Bing and her husband, E.L. Bing Sr. It was one of the more successful and notable businesses during that time, anchoring a Black historic district in that area. So one of the grandchildren deeded the house to the organization, and we took on that project to restore into a museum. We always try to confirm, obviously, who stayed there. Muddy Waters was often a frequent guest there. He was, of course, notable in the jazz arena, musician. We do have those who said that James Brown stayed there. A lot of oral history accounts of that. Negro League baseball players was a major tenant of that location. We confirmed that through Major League Baseball a number of years ago, where their historians came in the town and affirmed that. Satchel Paige stayed there when he was playing with the Homestead Grays and traveling between the Florida circuit. And ironically, a number of school teachers, we found out, being that it was a rooming house during the era of segregation, transportation was limited. There was a Marshall High School in Plant City at that time. there were a number of teachers that were recruited from Tampa that would come and stay at the rooming house and teach at the school and then commute back home on the weekends. Again, growing up in the military and coming back home, and I've been very unapologetic about that, it was a sticker shock coming back home. In the late 1990s, there was an aura of a racial division. But I've been fortunate to see that change as the leaders in the community have changed and leaders in the city have changed. One of the things you can tout about is the Bing Rooming House being funded by the city. They invested a number of dollars into restoring that structure. I remember when we first took on that project and presented it to the city, there was a poll that was conducted through the Plant City Courier, and that poll reached out citywide, and there was a 80% turnout that they felt the Bing House was not a good idea. Now, moving forward, 16, 17 years later, the Bing House is well attended by people from various diversities throughout the city of Plant City. So it just goes to show you that the mentality and the culture has indeed changed. We can attest that, at least 50% of the support that we have for the Rooming House is from non-African Americans. So I think that's a good testament to show how I personally witnessed, even in this late era, the change of how people have accepted and embraced that piece of history in an effort to make sure we all come together.
Retired school teacher Janelle Green Johnson has fond memories of the Bing House. She's the granddaughter of the original owners. She shares her experiences growing up as an African American in Plant City.
My name is Janelle Green Johnson. I'm the granddaughter of Elijah Bing and Janie Wheeler Bing, who were the owners of the Bing Rooming House, the place we would all of the family would come together at holidays and tell stories and play. And it was just a place full of love. And so the restoration of the house means that we can kind of keep those memories. But it's also a place to house the history of African Americans here in Plant City and their accomplishments. Growing up in Plant City as a black child, we were very aware of segregation. There were places in downtown Plant City that you knew that you didn't venture into. I remember the colored only signs. You had the water fountain that you could drink out of. You couldn't go up to the counter to order a sandwich. But my parents taught us not to even go near the counter. I never drank out of one of the water fountains. Even going to the doctor's offices, they had the colored only side and the white only side. And of course, which side do you think was more pristine? It wasn't important that they swept or dusted or cleaned the area where blacks had to sit and wait. That's the way it was. The theater, they had one specific side, the floor. I can remember the floor being so sticky because they didn't bother to clean it. But if you wanted to go to the movies, that's what you had to go through. You didn't have DVDs and streaming and all of those kinds of things then. So those were just things that you had to go through. I can remember after desegregation and going to the integrated schools, you would think in your mind that the relationships that you fostered within the classrooms would carry outside of the classroom. But I can remember one day walking downtown and seeing a classmate who walked across the street so that they would not have to interact with me. I think my parents and grandparents really raised us to be strong, independent. They explained to us what was going on. We knew what was going on, and we knew how to act and react in certain situations to make sure that we were safe. I was blessed in that I never saw anything horrific happen. I heard of things, but never saw anything. Like I said before, I knew there were restaurants. There's a restaurant right here, right now, that I have never stepped foot in because I grew up knowing that if you wanted something, you had to go to the back door. I was not going to the back door. No one in my family was going to the back door. I've never stepped foot in there. My husband was not raised here. He's been there. And my son has been there. But I've explained to both of them why I don't go there. And that's just, you know, the way it is. There have been some changes, I think. I look at my son, who's 29, who has some very, very good, strong relationships. One of his best friends is white, and he has been there for him no matter what the situation. I have friends. I can remember the first day that I went to school at Plant City High School. And it was just before the complete desegregation plan went into effect. And sitting at a table in the lunchroom alone, and there was this young lady who came over and sat with me. She was white. And we're still friends to this day. Her name is Kathy Myers. And we don't see each other all the time, but I remember that, and that meant a lot to me. When I was teaching at Cork Elementary, her daughter was a student at Cork, and so we reconnected. And her daughter and my son were in classes together. And so it was like full circle. I always included African American history in whatever subjects I would be teaching. It wasn't just Black History Month. I had Hispanic kids in my class. I made sure that I included something about their ethnicity. So I spent a lot of my money and time researching to make sure that I had books that included all ethnicities so that children could see that it is like one big mixing pot, that everyone can do the same thing. I am somebody.
That's it for today's show. You can find videos of the Bing House and other parts of Plant City on our website, WUSFnews.org. Just click on that Florida Matters tab. And join us in 2 weeks for part two of this series, which will focus on some Plant City attractions like the Strawberry Festival and photo archives. This episode was produced by Stephanie Colombini, Mark Schreiner, Jeanette Abramson, and USF student journalists Sam Newland, Chevelli Guzman, Natalie Island, Jeremy Wade, Alexa Ignacio, and Molly Ernick. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Robin Sessingham. Thanks for listening.